ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஏவம் சீர் ஏவம் ச நிர்வினமனான் நிர்போக்ரஹான் நிஷீத உத்தாய மஹோதயோதயாத் அலப்த்ரா நித்ரோ நுபலக்ஷிதோ நிர்பீர் ஹிட்வாகதோ வேன சுவம் ப்ரசுப்தாம் ஏவம் சவித் ஏவம் ச நிர்வினமனான் நிர்போக்ரஹான் நிஷீத உத்தாய மஹோதயோதயாத் அலப்தா நித்ரோ நுபலக்ஷிதோ நிர்பீர் ஹிட்வாகதோ வேன சுவம் ப்ரசுப்தாம். ஏவம் தஸ் ஸஹ ஹி நிர்வினமனா, being indifferent in mind, nripa king anga, grahat from home, nishite in the dead of night, uthaya getting up, maha udhaya udayat opulent by the blessings of great souls. Alabdha nidraha, being without sleep. Anupalakshitaha, without being seen. Nribihi, by the people in general. Hitva, giving up. Gataha, went off. Vena suvam, the mother of Vena. Prasuptam, sleeping deeply. Translation: thinking like that, King Anga could not sleep at night. He became completely indifferent to household life. Once, therefore, in the dead of night, he got up from bed and left Vena's mother, his wife, who was sleeping deeply. He gave up all attraction for his greatly opulent kingdom and, unseen by anyone, he very silently gave up his home and opulence and proceeded towards the forest. Doesn't say what his wife did. Purport. In this verse, the word mahodayat, mahodayodayat, mahodayodayat, indicates that by the blessings of a great soul, one becomes materially opulent. But when one gives up the attachment to material wealth, that should be considered an even greater blessing from the great souls. It was not a very easy task for the king to give up his opulent kingdom and his young faithful wife, but it was certainly a great blessing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he could give up the attachment and go out to the forest without being seen by anyone. There are many instances of great souls leaving home in this way, in the dead of night, giving up attachment for home, wife, and money. So those of you that are householders know you know what to do. Shh. Don't say that Maharaj told you to do this. Evam sa nirvinamana nirpo grahan nishita utaya maho dayo dayat alamdha nidro nupalakshito nirbir hitvagato vena suvam prasuptam. Thinking like that, King Anga could not sleep at night. He became completely indifferent to household life. Once, therefore, in the dead of night, he got up from bed and left Vena's mother, his wife, who was sleeping deeply. He gave up all attraction for his greatly opulent kingdom, and, unseen by anyone, he very silently gave up his home and opulence and proceeded toward the forest. When the devotees had depicted Maharaj Yudhisthira heading for the north country, the Himalayas, after understanding that Krishna had left, the artist depicted Yudhisthira wearing saffron cloth, matted hair, and carrying a danda. And when Prabhupada looked at the painting, he said, Kshatriyas, when they renounce the world, they don't accept the order of sannyas. The order of sannyas is meant for brahmanas. A Kshatriya may renounce worldly life and he accepts vanaprastha life, but not sannyas, tridanda, sannyas. So there's no, something like this couldn't happen in ISKCON anyway, because somebody could leave home but they can't. There's no awarding of sannyas because somebody just got up and left home. It's a whole deal for getting sannyas in ISKCON. A review process and check with the wife and make sure the wife says it's okay, yes, he has my blessings, he can take sannyas, and then maybe he can take sannyas. Several points there. In the very beginning of the purport, Prabhupada notes the word maho dayo dayat, which indicates that by blessings of great souls, one may achieve worldly opulence. But it's a greater blessing to receive the good fortune of being detached from material opulence. One of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's favorite Prabhupada stories, one of many, was when riding in a train in India, Prabhupada was in a first class compartment, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, actually it was Hari Sori tells the story, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj would sit with Prabhupada in his first class compartment in order to keep people away from bothering Prabhupada, so he could just sit in his little compartment undisturbed. And then the others would sit in other places. So one time when Tamal Krishnamurti had to get up and use the bathroom, somebody came along and noticed that it was a sannyasi, elderly sadhu sitting there, and he came in with his little family. And Tamal Krishnamurti came back from the bathroom and was like, you know, get out of here, this is Prabhupada's room. And so Prabhupada stopped him, you know, let him sit here. And then the discussion from the gentleman was exactly as Prabhupada said, Swamiji, please give your blessings to myself and my family. And Prabhupada said, very well, I'll give you my blessings. Tamal Krishnamurti, bring the other devotees here. And he brought the other devotees, and they're all wearing saffron and, you know, renounced young men. And Prabhupada said, the blessing I give you is you become like them. You become renounced sannyasi. And the man said, well, I think I have to go now, Swamiji. Thank you very much for your time. And that just disappeared. And everybody burst out laughing. And Prabhupada said, just as he's saying here, generally people approach a saintly person with the idea of, give me some material opulence. Let my son pass his exam, or my son or daughter get a good wife or husband, or may I get great wealth. You know, please give me your blessings. Instead of the greater blessing, Prabhupada was happy to give the greater blessing, becoming detached from material opulence. And that becomes possible through blessings. It becomes possible through accept. Blessings comes in the form of accepting the process of attachment to Krishna, detachment from matter. The greater blessing. And commonly Prabhupada would speak about that, making that step or entering that stage of life. It's not easy. It's easy to get attached. It's very difficult, not easy, to become unattached once one is attached. Even those who are detached, they're attached to the little possessions that they have. In Ramanujacharya's life, there was a very opulent, gaudy, opulent young man. Beautiful, handsome, strong. He was a wrestler, professional wrestler. And his girlfriend, beautiful, the way it's described in his Leela, is a courtesan. It means like, you know, an opulent prostitute with such stunning beauty that Danur Das was making himself a laughingstock of the public, because there was a big festival and the deity was being taken in procession, and the drums and the shanai and the mantras and the big festivity, and there he was holding a white umbrella over the woman and just staring at her face, fanning with her the other hand so she wouldn't get any beads of perspiration on her face, completely oblivious to what was going on. Completely oblivious. And Ramanujacharya had just was returning from taking his bath, midday bath. So it was midday, his heat, umbrella, fan, staring. They were on the opposite side of the street and they could see this person. And Ramanujacharya said, does anybody know who that person is? Nobody had seen him before. He said, invite the person to come across the street over here and let him know I'd like to speak with him. He was so the devotee went across the street. He was so absorbed. He couldn't even hear Ramanujacharya's assistant calling, you know, "Excuse me, sir," like, you know, for a minute and a half, pulling on his shirt and feel like yelling in his ear, "Huh? Huh?" Finally, his attention could be withdrawn. And he said, "Ramanujacharya, the successor of Jamunacharya, is right there across the street, and he has asked for you to come and speak with him." And he didn't want to leave the woman's side. So he gave her the umbrella she could hold and the fan she could fan herself, and went across the street. And Ramanujacharya said, Do you realize you're making a complete fool of yourself in public? The degree to which you're attached is crazy. Everyone's laughing at you. Are you unaware of that? What is it about this woman that has you so completely captivated? And Dhanardas replied, "In this lifetime I've seen many beautiful things, beautiful scenes of nature, beautiful creations of art, many, many beautiful things, but I've never seen anything so beautiful as this woman's eyes. And just once I look at her eyes, I can't take my eyes off of her eyes. The most beautiful thing in the creation of God is this woman's eyes." See, Ramanujacharya said, "Who are you? And where have you come from?" "I'm from such and such village, and I'm the personal assistant of the king. I'm his personal wrestler. And my name is Dhanardas." He said, is the woman your wife?" He said, "No. But she's as good as my wife, because I know that I love her and nobody else but her, and because of her beautiful eyes." So Ramanuja said, "If that's the principal attraction, if it was possible, even possible, that there was another pair of eyes that surpassed the beauty of her eyes, what would you do if you could find such a pair of eyes more beautiful than her eyes?" He said, "It's not possible. It's just not possible. But if it happened, I would just give her up and accept this more beautiful." So Ramanujacharya said, "I will take you to see more beautiful eyes. Come to my ashram tonight. After the festival is over, come to my ashram. Everyone knows where my ashram is, they'll tell you." So he came that evening. And just before the evening aarti, because he's Ramanujacharya, he went right before the deity, and the pujari lit the lamp and showed the lamp at the feet of the deity and the waist of the deity and the golden beautiful eyes of the deity. And because Dhanardas was very practiced at looking at eyes, he knew how to absorb himself in eyes. When he saw the eyes of Ranganath, he swooned in a spiritual happiness that he didn't even know had existed before. Right there in front of the deity, he fell at Ramanujacharya's feet and began crying, saying, "I'm just an attached fool for who knows what good fortune has come into my life to get your blessings to now see the deity form of the Lord like this. I surrender unto you. You please take me to that greater realm and help me leave behind this worldly attraction." And Ramanujacharya embraced him and accepted him. The girl also had some latent devotional sentiments, and as her, the person who she was so worldly attached to, moved in the direction that he moved, she moved with him. She became both of them became followers of Ramanujacharya. Then Ramanujacharya got them both together, instructed them, get properly married and live as proper husband and wife. And because Dhanur Das was so, in his own simple way, so devoted to Ramanujacharya, he accepted his service. His Brahmana disciple, one of his leading Brahmana disciples, would accompany him three times a day to go to the river to take his bath, and Dhanur Das would accompany him coming back. And Ramanuja was leaning on him and associating him with him like he was a respectable Brahmana, although his caste and his former occupation was a Shudra. And the sannyas disciples of Ramanujacharya, they were upset. Why is he doing this? He's a high-class Brahmana, and this man is an attached Shudra householder. And they began speaking like that against Ramanujacharya. His own disciples were speaking in this way. So he came to know that they were speaking in this way. So he decided to teach them a lesson. One night, in the dead of night, he went into their sannyas ashram, and he took this person's clothes and put him over there, and put that person's gumsha and put it over there, this person's kopins and put it over there, and took a couple pieces of cloth and ripped them, and left the ashram. And when everybody woke up, it was, "Hey, what's going on? Someone, who did you do this? And I know he's envious and jealous of me. He must have done this." And over their very little possessions that they were so attached to. And then he called them at night, in the evening, and told them, "Please tell me what happened in the ashram. I heard there was a big uproar." "Yeah, somebody did this." He didn't say he did it. He said, "Okay, well, I know that this is just circumstantial because you're not very attached people. Just something happened. I want to expose Dhanur Das and his wife, and I want you to help me do it. I want you to go. I'm going to invite Dhanur Das to come see me in the evening and we'll discuss Krishna Katha. Go to his home in his absence and take things from the home, valuable jewels and ornaments and whatever you can find. And then when Dhanur Das comes back home, you watch from the window and see what happens." So just fast forward quickly. They went. They were very happy. "Yes, we're going to show Ramanujacharya that these people are, he shouldn't have anything to do with them." So while Dhanur Das was with Ramanujacharya, the wife was at home resting. So they went into the home and they started stealing things. And she had some valuable earrings and ornaments, so they removed the ornaments and the earrings. She was wide awake, pretending to be asleep. She was thinking, these poor sadhus, they're so desperate that they're coming into someone's householder's home to steal. Let them take the things on the other side. So she rolled over so they could steal from the other side. And as she rolled over, whoosh, they took off. They thought, "Oh, she woke up. We have to skedaddle, get out of here." But then they waited by the window, and when Dhanur Das came back, his wife explained everything that happened, at least from her vantage point. "The sannyas disciples of Ramanujacharya came here, and they must be so poor. They're unfortunate men. They started taking things from our home, and including right off of my body, taking things. So So I turned over so they could take from the other side. I said, oh, you've done the wrong thing. You should have, shouldn't have let them run freely. Just somehow give it to them. Somehow you've done the wrong thing. And they were amazed at both of their detachment. So then Ramanujacharya, when they came back, asked for the report and then asked them, now how, look at the behavior. It was I just moved things around in your ashram. I didn't take anything. But you're so attached to your gamsha and your dhoti and where you put it at night that, you know, look at your behavior. Who's attached? Are you more attached or are they more attached? Please understand the difference. So detachment doesn't just mean leaving your ashram. But Ramanujacharya left his ashram. Vidura left his ashram. Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they left their ashram. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left his ashram. Now there's different reasons behind each of them. We were at this topic yesterday about frustration. That's one of the ways for leaving. Leaving out of indifference. Leaving what Prabhupada speaks about with for the higher cause is where the purpose is to achieve shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unencumbered by worldly attraction. The Narottama example. Or Paramahamsa position. So when Sanatana Goswami tricked the jailkeeper, or Raghunath Das Goswami, tricked the family guru. Oh, don't worry, I'll take care of the deities. You can go take rest. I'm a responsible person. When it was so late at night, no one else was up. He didn't take care of the deities. He just left. So that's like irresponsible. What about the deities? Or in this case, what about King Unga's wife? No, good for him, but what about his wife? She's got this vena to deal with, and her husband's gone. Hey, what's going on? The comment that Prabhupada makes, particularly with Raghunath Das, with also Sanatana Goswami, he makes the same comment. For there are things to do and things not to do, and those are standard rules of to do, not to do. But there is another level of merit, and that other level of merit is like what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in taking sannyas, or Raghunath Das Goswami, or because Raghunath Das Goswami was also married. Beautiful, faithful, young, happy to be in Raghunath Das Goswami's association. He just left. The standard, scriptural standard, is for higher cause. And with that higher cause, then some arrangement is there. If in fact it's a higher cause, some arrangement is there for one's well-being. I can't remember which sannyasi it was that I was, this is long ago, I was reading, of someone who was contemplating taking a renounced position from a household position. But he was concerned about the welfare of his wife. And while he was contemplating like that, there was a lizard that can't remember exactly, either had an egg or dropped an egg or something like that, and when the egg broke open, little baby lizard could barely just like open his eyes, and the first thing the lizard did was this little bug, and the tongue of the lizard went out and caught the bug, and with that he understood, this is a message of the Lord, there's nature's arrangement for the maintenance of all living beings. I don't need to stay here and worry about, oh, I have to, you know, give food to my dependents. And he left. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's accepting of sannyas, primarily the biographies speak nothing about how he did he prepare Vishnupriya. Like saying, you know, why didn't King Unga prepare his wife? Because she wouldn't have wanted him to go. Don't go. As she was attached to him, her appeal may have made it very difficult for him to go. So he didn't say anything. Specifically also, Vidura was a grihastha, and his wife was a great devotee of Krishna. And he just left. Doesn't speak anything about saying goodbye to his wife. He just left. One way. There is a discussion in Chaitanya Bhagavat of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dialogue with his mother. Because she's Mother Sachi, and she knew. And there had been talk, but she didn't even need to hear the talk. She knew because she's Mother Sachi. She's Lord Chaitanya's mother. She knew what was up and that he was going to leave. So that very night, she was waiting at the door, outside the door, and just waiting and weeping and sobbing. And Mahaprabhu walked out the door and saw his mother. And she couldn't even speak. And he knew what those tears and that weeping meant. And he spoke to her saying, "My dear mother, you are everything for me. You have sacrificed everything. How could I possibly leave you? Please understand, I'm doing this for the welfare of others, and I will come back and I will be with you. Please believe my words." She made verbal appeal, and he was unflinching in his determination and left. Didn't speak anything about his conversation with Vishnupriya. But there's one of the biographies, Chaitanya Mangala by Lochan Das Thakur. I referred to this when we were in, we observed his appearance day during our yatra. In his Chaitanya Mangala, there is a dialogue between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishnupriya. Just as he's leaving the door to take sannyas. And mind you, at this stage, she's something like 16 years old, married to a young Brahmin girl, married to Nimai Pandit, and fully dependent, fully faithful and everything that a perfect young wife could be. And here he is, walking out the door to take sannyas. It's not born of frustration. It's not simply detachment from worldly things. This is a lila. It's Lord Chaitanya's purpose of liberating so many people in the world by moving about freely and distributing love of God. So as he's leaving, I'm going to cover the dialogue part of it just by reading what Lord Chaitanya says. When he's leaving, she speaks to him and says, "O Prananath, you are everything to me. Just your order is my life and soul. Just give your order and it will be followed. Is it true that you'll be taking sannyas? I've heard it. I've heard persons speaking about it, but you've said nothing to me. So therefore I'm asking you directly if it's true. If it is true, then I shall enter fire. You're the treasure of my life. Your beautiful form is always ever fresh and newly youthful. Will you give up everything and go away? If I'm deprived of your association, I might as well just give up my life by drinking poison." Imagine hearing that from your wife. What are you going to say? First, he speaks words of pacifying by saying, "You are as dear as life itself to me. Please don't be in any anxiety. There is no need to worry at all. What I'm about to say is for your own benefit. Please hear me attentively with your whole mind." So first he starts speaking about transcendental knowledge. The world is false. Whatever you see in this world is false. The only truth is Bhagavan and the Vaishnavas. Without that, whatever you see is all illusion. Know this for a fact. Sons, wives, husbands, ladies, fathers, mothers, and everything else, all these relationships are illusory. They are temporary and transitional. In one lifetime, we have one set of sons, wives, husbands, etc. And in our next life, everything changes. Other than the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, we have no real family. Everything else that we see as our family is an illusion of Maya. What we see as man and woman is unreal. So that's the temporary nature of things of this world. Then the spiritual reality. Beneath the surface, all souls are spiritual energy. The relationship between men and women is an illusory connection of Maya. Sri Krishna is the real husband of everyone. He is the master. Everything else is material. But unfortunately, this is not understood by the people in general. The souls, embedded in a mixture of semen and blood from which the body is born, composed of stool and urine, in this way the soul moves upon this earth in ignorance. Describes the childhood, youth, old age, bewildered in various ways. Absorbed in false ego, we make friends, maintain attachments, suffering abuse, and are gradually cheated by old age. Even hearing the truth, however, still our eyes are blind, and while our suffering in the material world brings us to tears, we never worship Govinda. Forsaking Krishna's service, we maintain these bodies in the material world of birth and death, trapped in the bondage of Maya. Mad with false ego, we have forgotten our Lord. And so we ensure our passage to hell. Then he invokes her name. "Your name is Vishnu Priya. fulfill the real purport of Vishnu Priya, and do not lament for what is false. Remembering what I have said, cast your worries at a distance and always think of Krishna within your heart, day and night. And then he showed his forearm form of Lord Vishnu right before Vishnu Priya, according to Lochan Das Thakur. And then spoke to her and said, "You see before you the Supreme Lord. Cast your mayic lamentation away." Vishnu Priya was ecstatic. But at the same time, Lord Chaitanya is going to leave. She fell at the lotus feet of her husband and said, "O Lord, please listen to my entreaty. Falling at your feet again and again, I implore you to accept my humble submission. I am certainly the lowest, having taken birth in this world of samsara, but you are the Lord of my life. This is my only wealth. Without you, I have nothing. Without your service, I will certainly go down." Lord Chaitanya didn't say, "Okay, I'll stay." He smiled. Specifically, it says he embraced her with his eyes just to give her his mercy, and then said, "I will go here and I will go there, but wherever I go, I shall remain at your place. This truth I have spoken with great determination." And her final words were, "You must do whatever makes you happy. No one should be an obstacle to your divine mission." And with those words, he left. The other records of Lord Chaitanya's life don't have that exchange with Vishnu Priya. Lochan Das, the source of his writing, he says in the beginning of his book, is from the teachings that he heard from Damodar Pandit, who he heard from Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta's writings are considered authentic, yet anyway, the other commentators don't speak in that way, or biographers don't speak in that way. Whether the position in Lord Chaitanya's life was he spoke with Vishnu Priya or not, his is of that higher order, that is, for a higher purpose. That the scene is very much like Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. When Krishna left Vrindavan, just before Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, Narada visited. Just after Narada had visited Kamsa's palace. And when Narada visited Kamsa's palace, he told them, you know, "What's up?" And gave an indication, "Kamsa, protect your backside. Better take care of this young boy over there. That's the eighth child of Devaki. He's meant to kill you. You better do the needful, Kamsa." And right after that, Narada went to Krishna. And Krishna was so absorbed in his Vrajalila that he was forgetting the reason for his appearance. So Narada didn't want to, you know, correct his master. "Hey, Krishna, you know." So what he did was, he started describing, he visited Krishna, and Krishna received Narada like a brahmana is received with great respect. And Narada began just describing, "I long to see that day when your beloved parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, will be released from the prison house of Kamsa and that wicked counsel will be destroyed by your mighty arms. And that just as you appeared in this world, so many demoniac kings overburdening the earth, again and again you will relieve the earth from the burden of those demoniac kings, and the whole of the Yadu dynasty will go to Dwaraka and live there, ruling in Dwaraka, and you'll marry 16,108 wives. I long to see that day when the purpose for your advent will be fulfilled, and Vasudeva and Devaki will be vindicated from being imprisoned in the wicked Kamsa's prison house. Krishna stood up and said, "We'll go tomorrow." Very good, Narada. And the very next day, Krishna left because Akura was sent. Krishna left Vrindavan. And the scene of Krishna leaving Vrindavan, the scene of separation, just as the scene of separation of Mother Sachi and Vishnu Priya, who can imagine what the wife of Anga, because he wasn't just like a nice king, he was a very elevated personality. And the indication is his wife is also very, very elevated and very faithful. So the scene of separation from a qualified person, Prabhupada took sannyas. Not the same way necessarily, dead of night, but he, out of, you know, for his wife, the selling of the value of Srimad Bhagavatam is so she could sell some copies and buy tea biscuits, whatever tea biscuits are. I know what tea bags are, I know what tea biscuits are. It's what you eat with the tea bags, like biscuits. It's tea or me, and she chose, so he left. So as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, there are many instances of great souls having left home in this way, in the dead of night, giving up attachment for home, wife, and money. He doesn't say, and I'm one of them, but many great souls have done this in the past, so it's not, we don't blame Vena, just like, oh, you're just frustrated. Just stay and deal with this problem. It's, you know, it's the problem was one thing, and the attachment was another thing. And he understood this is an arrangement of the Supreme Lord to help me become freed from my worldly attachment. And he accepted it at that way at least, and left in a detached manner. To be continued. So the chapter is almost over. Any discussion?
By, let's say, the normal audience, they're not so devotional.
They won't understand.
Okay. I mean, that would answer my question.
They won't understand.
How would we, let's say, for persons who have somehow or other heard these things, people like scholars who have studied these things and so on, how would we explain, many of the Bhagavatam messages seem to be from the perspective of the male. And
yes.
And, you know, this great man, she's leaving, and then
yeah.
You know, here's a woman, and she's just like, you know, tea biscuits are not very important. So how do we
can understand in this way, when great personalities are involved, and it's not just like, you know, irresponsible life, but it's actually a great personality, the Lord gives his protection. We don't, you know, that we not may not be spelling out what happened to Vidura's wife, what happened to Vishnupriya, what happened to King Anga's wife. But the Lord made some arrangement to care for them. That's our understanding. When one is on that level of spirituality, that's what happens. She isn't like, you know, cast aside like garbage. The Lord took some arrangement, made some arrangement. And that's the... So there's a big difference between irresponsible life and saintly life. And the Lord's reciprocation is that big difference. The connection. And for one who is dear to an elevated personality, the Lord gives special protection to them. And they'll go, you know, ridiculous. It's irresponsible life. Okay. Okay.
Was there something culturally also within the culture for when men resist and not sin?
I don't have the answer for that. I mean, the culture is the eldest son, but you look at the eldest son in this case. The ministers, the relatives. What Ramanujacharya did was he sent his wife to his wife's father on a pretext. But, you know, so she was with her father and being cared for by her father.
Maharaj, if I understand, Anga took one prastha because he was a Kshatriya king. As you said, they don't take sannyas. My question is, we hear so many stories in Bhagavatam, then in Prabhupada's lectures, and as you mentioned, so many examples from the past. But we don't observe so many examples in the next generation. Like, I'm 35, but I don't see any senior devotees, senior grihasthas for that matter, in ISKCON, who are at the age of 50 or 55 or 60, doing one prastha so much. Rather, we see some funny examples, rather getting attached after age of 50 or 55, grihastha. So Prabhupada wanted us to take one prastha. So how does it implement it in ISKCON?
Janananda, does that name mean anything to you? Prabhupada disciple named Janananda. For the longest time he was married, living in Malaysia or Indonesia or somewhere over there. And he wanted to start a vanaprastha ministry, saying pretty, you know, along the same line. There's a sannyas ministry, and there are places where there's, you know, ashrams for brahmacharis, but where's this other entity, the vanaprastha entity? He started picking up some steam. There were some persons interested, others like him, that, you know, wanted to see this genuine ashram thing get set up. And what he ended up doing was take sannyas. So, you know, that ended that effort. But there are not a lot of examples. Like, the more prominent example is like what he did. Badri Narayan is going to be taking sannyas. His children are grown up and he's done his worldly duty. In his case, it's not so appropriate. Sannyas is appropriate. But there are examples that persons that in New York Temple, one of our board of directors members, a close friend of Vedavyasa Priya Swami from when they were growing up together. They went to the same school together and so on and so on. So, Shiva Radya, his two sons are grown up. One is married and the other, I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, they stay... They're both married now. Okay. So, he goes out... You know, he went out for 3 months and came back, went out for 3 months and came back, went out for 4 months and came back, went out for, you know, 6 months and came back. Well, so... Gradually, you know, moving in that direction. And she feels cared for, he doesn't feel neglected, and she understands what he's doing, and it's not like anything abrupt. So there's a nice example of Vanaprastha traveling with Vedavyasa Priya Maharaj and doing other things, you know, developing that side of his life, having completed his worldly duties. So that's a nice example. Or what Lakshmi Nisringa is doing, you know, working and put the children through school at a certain point in time, letting them know, we're not going to work anymore and put you through school. You're going to have to, because we're going to preach Krishna consciousness. He and his wife. There are not too many examples.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have a kind of an appreciation and kind of a question too. I was appreciating how Vishnupriya, even though she's 16 years old, her mood of sacrifice, like she has this intense attachment to her husband, who's the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, the mood of, like she's so young, but she has so strong within. And that's a great appreciation I have for her. And I was thinking in my own services, like, is it a good example to give to these young girls, like, to meditate upon Vishnupriya, that even though there is a strong attachment to the Lord, but being in a mood of sacrifice is much easier. Otherwise, the sense gratification program, like, because generally everyone says teenagers are self-absorbed and all they're thinking is about themselves. But I feel that Vishnupriya's example is a good example.
That's a great example. The attachment was service. The attachment wasn't an object for me to enjoy, or by your presence I'll feel protected. But simply, that's a byproduct. His reassurance, she accepted when she received his reassurance, I may go here and there, but please know, I'm nowhere else but with you. I'm here. Please believe my word. And he just showed his forearm form. So, that protection was still being extended. His presence was still being offered. And ultimately, it's her service mood is her greater attachment. Let no obstacle stand in the way of your mission, including myself. That's self-sacrifice with a spiritual conception, and you don't get it with a material conception.
So in the modern, in the present context, so chastity to the spiritual master can invoke that kind of a sacrificial.
Sure, sure. Sure. That's protection. Spiritual protection.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, why does one, a householder, kind of feel guilty about becoming detached from, you know, his wife and his children?
Is this autobiographical question? Well, in one sense, it's a good feeling. In another sense, it's not a good feeling. The good feeling is dutiful. And it's not a good feeling because it's one who's not thinking dutifully to give, to extend care, protection, necessities, shelter. One who's not thinking that way, that's irresponsible. So it's responsible, it's dutiful. And so it's there, that feeling of guilt is there, if the attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual higher plane of consciousness, is not strong. There may be some inclination or indication, some hint, but if it's not sufficiently strong, then this other will, you know, hold you back or make one feel guilty. It's like, for a number of us, particularly Western, but you know, wherever someone makes a strong commitment to Krishna consciousness, some people over there are being disappointed. Those people over there, meaning those who you grew up with, your friends or your parents or your siblings, or you know, they're expecting this worldly thing, and you're not being that worldly thing, you're being Hare Krishna, Brahmachari. And so one could feel guilty. I'm not fulfilling the expectations of my family members, my parents and my friends and so on. Guilty. But there's a higher purpose. And that higher purpose has to be clear, otherwise, you know, one will go to fulfill that other sense of loyalty to those who have these expectations of me, even though it's not me. I mean, it's not me. It's what they're expecting me to be, and I'm just like, I'm supposed to live out what their expectations are. That sense of loyalty. That's, you know, that has some religious foundation to it also, respecting
though we come detached, we still have spiritual, I mean, we become attached to spiritual life. We still have family duties to perform, you know.
Yeah, one should not be irresponsible. That's that other pull, it's responsibility. One should not be irresponsible. But on the other, on the other hand, we need to be responsible to our ultimate life's destination, to go back to Godhead. So how do we fulfill that? A lot depends on how strong is your Krishna consciousness, how strong is your realization, your hearing and chanting, the deeper realization that you have. And depending upon that, Krishna will take care. There's this thing, how do we make the balance? It's just, you know, how do we become Krishna conscious? That's how you make the balance. And Krishna makes the balance. Krishna is the maintainer and provider and protector of everyone. And I think, you know, I'm going to do it. Anyway. So there's responsibility, but there's also higher responsibility. Anything from the ladies' side? Go right ahead.
Guru Maharaj, I kind of have a partially formulated question. It's sort of, I was trying to figure out how to ask it. But you were talking about detachment and how when even you may be detached and not even have so much, but still somehow you become attached, like the sannyasis that you were talking about. So my question is what about the more subtle things, like being attached to wanting things a certain way, or being attached to opinions, or things like that? It's hard to give those up sometimes. And
same principle. I didn't catch the first part. As you said, it's not so clear what you're asking.
Yeah.
But subtle attachments are in principle the same as the more gross attachments. It's the same principle. And the same feeling guilty by not fulfilling those subtle attachments and expectations that others have of you for those attachments to them. And like this question that came yesterday about sensitivity, it's not only just me being sensitive, but others perceiving me am I being sensitive? The perceptions of others. It's the same. Principle. As like the question we just heard. How strong is our clear picture of what the goal is? If the clear picture of the goal and the means to sustain the effort to get there are missing, then we're going to be hovering on the mental platform, going like this. So don't go like this. Look to take steps that are sustainable based upon the strength of your hearing and chanting, and the spiritual conceptions and spiritual relationships and those means by which Krishna will carry us to his abode. Look to that rather than like, how do I balance all this stuff? Anartha Nivritti happens on the strength of Bhajana Kriya. And then there can be steadiness, not this thing. Okay, thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.